You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The Oriental Theater in Milwaukee has acquired an instrument to match its vintage decor, a 99-year-old Wurlitzer pipe organ. That's one of only a dozen left in the world. It's not your everyday church organ, though. Here's just a few of the sounds it can make. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you heard this organ at the Oriental Theater or one like it? Do you have thoughts on live music at the movies like there often was during the silent film era? Have you encountered one of these, some kind of vintage pipe organ in one venue or another? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kristen Heller is the Chief Operations Officer at Milwaukee Film. Kristen, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me.
All right, we got a little taste of some non-organ associated sounds this can make. Can you paint us a picture? What does this thing look like?
Sure. If you were to look at it from the standpoint of the audience, the only thing that you'd really get to see is the console. And that's the big piece that has all the little keys, it has the pedals, and it's what the organist plays on. But there's a lot that's hidden. Like, for instance, just down in our orchestra pit, there's a secondary piano. They actually have a whole second piano that they can play with. And then up in the chambers, in addition to pipes that you can imagine are big and varying in size, there's also sleigh bells, drums, cymbals. There's a glockenspiel in there. So there's a lot of components that really fill out the different types of sounds it can make. One of my favorites is there's a train whistle that we can use when it's appropriate in films.
I understand this is a long-term mission of Milwaukee Film to bring a pipe organ like this back to the Oriental Theater. Can you share some of the history?
Yeah, absolutely. We took over operation of the Oriental Theater in 2018. And at that time, the organ that had been in there, which was a Kimball from 1931, had been removed to go into a different collection. And that had actually been the second organ that had been in the Oriental. Before that, there was a Barton pipe organ that was the original one, which was originally built in Oshkosh. And when we took over the operation of the Oriental Theater, we knew we wanted to find the right piece. And luckily, when you take over a historic theater, you say you're going to do renovations and you say you're looking for a pipe organ, people tend to come out looking for you. and so we ended up having a couple different proposals to look at and review, and we ended up choosing Jeff Weiler's company, which is J.L. Weiler Inc., and they had this organ, and they had held on to it for about 18 years, and they were just looking for the right partner for this very special instrument, and it felt like the perfect fit for us.
A 99-year-old instrument. An instrument like that, I know, comes with a feeling of history behind it. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like to have this instrument that's seen some stuff over the years, I'm sure?
Well, and what makes this one unique is that, you know, when an organ is used over the years, like if it's really played, things are going to break, things are going to be replaced. So, for instance, the Kimball that had been there before had been maintained over the years, whereas this one had been in the Paramount Theater in Atlanta from about 1920 to 1960, and then it went to a private collection with the plans that it would be someone's private organ room, but they never actually built it. So this instrument is actually fully intact. The way that you hear today is exactly how it sounded back in 1925.
Talking to Kristen Heller with Milwaukee Film, looking at a new/old pipe organ now at the Oriental Theater. So what are the plans? I mean, the classic days of silent films, somebody would be playing live on this organ along with movies. What kind of performances do you envision for this Wurlitzer?
Well, the next opportunity that people will have to hear it is that we have a film festival coming up in April, and we're planning a few of our screenings that there'll be a little bit of fun fanfare before the films. We're also planning at least one, if not two, feature presentations throughout this year, and we're just working on locking in those details, so we'll be able to share those out soon.
Can you talk about the restoration process and installation process? This is not something you just wheel in and set down, right?
No, absolutely not. In fact, the installation process for this took over a year and thousands of man hours to give getting the big pieces in. That was its own little labor of love. And we had a small but mighty crew that did it. But in addition to that, when you fully assemble a pipe organ, you're really building out a nervous system. There's actually, with our organ, there's about 60 miles of wire that made over 14,000 electrical connections, just sort of connecting things from the console to the relay, which is the bit of the brain, and then sending it to all the parts of the organ. So it is a very intensive process. And there's a lot of other steps involved. For instance, our organ chambers are temperature controlled because if the temperature in them changes, the pitch of the organ changes. So tuning is a very thorough process. And it's one that we will be working to maintain and working to have it looked over the years to make sure that it sounds exactly as it's supposed to as we play it.
Kristen, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor to be here.
That's Kristen Heller, Chief Operations Officer at Milwaukee Film. She talks about the Oriental Theater's acquisition and, like, the installation of a 99-year-old pipe organ. We're going to look at the role of music in movies and the classic days of pipe organs in silent films. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gone to see showings of an old silent movie with that live accompaniment or live music for any movie, new or old? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the history of live musical accompaniment in movie theaters after hearing that story about a 99-year-old Wurlitzer organ being installed at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you've encountered one of these old pipe organs, maybe watched silent movies with the silence broken by the pipe organ. Join in at 800-642-1234. Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies is an assistant professor and director of film studies at UW-Milwaukee. Jocelyn, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be here. Always great to talk with you, Rob.
You too. Now, take us back 99 years in time. This Wurlitzer organ presumably might have accompanied silent films. What was the role of the music and the pipe organ as I sat down to watch this movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to always remember that when we talk about silent films, the movies were never silent. There was always ambient noise, always people talking, even before the era of the pipe organ, which was something that was really popular during the Movie Palace era. Even before that, in the Nickelodeon, which is really the precursor to the Movie Palace as we know it, theaters like the Oriental, even in the Nickelodeon, there would be a stand-up piano. Often the exhibitor who ran the theater might give a bit of narration during the film. So there's always sort of this extra sound that is around the movie as we watch it. But once the organ comes into play, well, there's all sorts of like extravagant sounds that can happen. And we heard a few examples of this from the pipe organ that has been purchased by Milwaukee Film to appear in their theater now. So there would be this really excessive, big noise, but also weird sound effects, things like doorbells or train whistles, even like animal sounds. All of that could be performed with the use of the organ. So it really served to fill up a bigger auditorium space, a space that could seat maybe a couple thousand people, even more, and would really serve to immerse the audience into the entirety of the filmic presentation.
As a musician, I wonder if I had that gig as the organist at the theater, like, do I get handed sheet music that was supposed to accompany this movie, or am I just watching the movie and winging it?
Well, it could be both. You know, often movies didn't come with specific music to be played, right? Like, you could decide what you wanted to play based on what theater you were in, what you were interested in. And really, a lot of it was up to the organist, right? Like, what you wanted to do.
Did this add to the experience, you think, for viewers having the organ and all the sounds and things like that? Or did people find it a distraction? Or it could have gone either way, I guess, with any soundtrack.
Yeah, you know, I think it could go either way. We can never really know entirely what audiences thought, but it certainly added to the enormity of the experience, right? Like, the Movie Palace is so big, so wild, so broad, right? This kind of sound adds to the spectacle of it. Even though spectacle is, of course, a visual term, this adds an extra element of sensory experience. And I'd like to actually point for a minute to somebody who is kind of really important in the development of the theater organ. We associate the name Wurlitzer with the organ, and they certainly were. The Wurlitzer company was responsible for the dramatic burgeoning of movie theater organs across the United States in particular. But there's a figure who really is responsible for the development of the theater organ as we know it. And if I can just tell you a little bit about him, because there's nothing I love more as a historian than figures of hubris, madness, and weirdness who pop up.
Definitely tell us about this.
Right? And so often these figures, they're in the movies, right? They are so drawn to like this burgeoning industry. So this man, Robert Hope Jones, who's from the UK, he starts working in the late 19th century on church organs. And he thinks, okay, well, these church organs, they're really great. I can make them even bigger, even better, even more dramatic. In the early 20th century, he actually moves from the UK to upstate New York. And that's when he begins experimenting with what will become the movie theater organ. Hope Jones, he's so fascinating because he works in churches, right? But he also was an electrician. He worked for the telephone company as well, doing various kind of electrification procedures for them. So he had both of these skills, both as a musician and as an electrician, and all of this experience in churches. He is the perfect person to come up with what the movie theater organ will be. We think about the theater too as a kind of temple to movies. I think it's absolutely perfect that this man who worked on church organs then develops the theater organ. So he moves to upstate New York, starts his own factory making these organs, and he becomes obsessed with the expressive elements of the organ, how the organ can provide all sorts of big feeling, make like big atmosphere. And he comes up with all of these wacky inventions like the second touch or double touch. And that's where a key can be depressed twice to create two different sounds on the organ. That becomes a standard feature of the Wurlitzer. He does all sorts of elaborate wiring. He's responsible for electrifying the organ in general. He adds percussion. He adds the kinds of sound effects that we hear. But unfortunately, his company fails miserably because when he opens it in the mid-1900s, well, it's right in the middle of a minor recession and he just fails. So Wurlitzer comes in, buys his company in 1910 and keeps him on contractually, but he can't go anywhere else because he's under Wurlitzer's thumb. So he can't really take the patent and the work to any other company. And then over time, he becomes this kind of strange ghostly presence in the factory, slowly begins to fade away. In 1914, he killed himself by inhaling gas. And then Wurlitzer ends up with all of the technical accomplishments of the organ, and they get all of the celebration of bringing the theater organ to the United States. But it's really Robert Hope Jones who invented what we now know as the Wurlitzer organ.
And Jocelyn, we just have a couple of minutes left. I want to talk about, you know, the end of the organ era. Now, silent films, the dialogueless films, they start to go away. Does the pipe organ go away immediately, or does it hang around in the movie experience for a while?
You know, it does hang around for a while. They were hideously expensive to install. And if there's one thing that movie theater owners wanted to do, it was get the most bang for their buck, right? Like they're investing all this money. They want to see some return on investment. So even though sound comes in and it comes in quickly, right? In 1927, the jazz singer comes out and that is it. It is time to convert to sound. Audiences are demanding it. Exhibitors are demanding it. It is a dramatic change. But the organ does stick around for about a little bit less than a decade, gets played here and there between maybe in an intermission or between features, between like the cartoon and the feature, as kind of like another element of luxury in the movie palace. But gradually over time, they get taken out. They get sold off to churches, which is kind of hilarious to think about a church with an organ that makes like train whistle sound effects. Right? Like, is that useful during the sermon? I don't know. But they really begin to disappear after the 1930s into the 1940s.
I could think of a couple examples, but does live music come back as a thing for screenings of movies much at all? I saw a Philip Glass and ensemble do Koyaanisqatsi live. Wasn't that much different than hearing it recorded. honestly, live music just isn't a thing for movies after the organ era, is it?
It's really not. I mean, it has to be like a kind of special event status that you'll see. Maybe with some experimental film, you might see it in the 1960s in some like avant-garde theaters in New York in particular. So really outside of the mainstream is where you would typically see and hear live music accompaniment. Koyaanisqatsi is a great example, and I'm actually really jealous of that. That's pretty cool.
It was kind of cool, but could I really tell the difference if they just played the album? I don't know. I got to ask, though, Jocelyn, you're super into film history. Do you love going in to see movies with that pipe organ when you can nowadays?
You know, I never really get the opportunity to do it. I do think they sound a little bit ridiculous. I'm not going to lie. They're a little bit outrageous. But what they make me think of, Rob, is they make me think about this history of the church and the organ and how that then filters into the history of the movies. And it makes me think about how it really is a sacred space to be in the theater. And we have all these reminders, as kind of like outrageous and silly as they might seem. They remind us of all of these larger cultural connections and even spiritual connections that movies as an aesthetic and social form have for all of us. And that, I think, is a really beautiful thing.
Jocelyn, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, it's great to chat with you.
That's Jocelyn Sapaniak-Gillies, Associate Professor and Director of Film Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She talked to us about the history of live music at the movies and the pipe organ specifically as the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee gets a 99-year-old Wurlitzer.